and it does encryption and it does not accept user input to do that. And that is like reflective of this change in cryptographers' understandings of how to implement cryptography securely in the actual tools that users touch.
It is implemented in Rust. I don't know if we need to talk too much about that, though.
Okay, so what if the government blocks port 465? Go.
Googling. No, I'm not Googling. I'm doing an internet search on port 465.
The internet breaks.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. I think that I was expecting an answer like the one that she just gave.
Yeah, so you can't block port 465 because exactly as Mary said, the internet breaks. And this is part of what's really cool of DeltaChat choosing to use email as a transport protocol, which like it wasn't designed to be a transport protocol, as a transport layer, I mean, is like you can't block DeltaChat on a whole network without blocking all email on a network. You can block individual DeltaChat backend servers, but you can't simply block all of DeltaChat because it's indistinguishable from regular email. And yeah, as soon as regular email stops working, like every corporation falls apart, the government stops working. Like this is how everyone talks to each other, especially.
The number you have reached, area code 41432704494, is being checked for trouble.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
And out in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
You do indeed. Good evening.
And I want to thank everybody for staying with us here on WBAI instead of trying to see that stupid tree get lit, which is happening at exactly, they always do it at Wednesday at 7 p.m., you know, for decades. So I don't know whose fault it is, but we're always coming up against each other. But thank you for listening to us. We're going to be spending the hour talking about high technology and the latest hijinks and things like that. And then we are going to have overtime at 8 o'clock on YouTube. So you can make your phone calls there. Anyone have any interesting news or exciting events or anything to share with us? Yes, Alex.
Well, funnily enough, you mentioned the tree. I was invited to a Christmas tree lighting ceremony at a friend's new law firm that was the New York office of a law firm that just launched in New York. And they're looking down on it from 75 Rockefeller Center, looking down at the tree. But I elected instead to be here with you guys.
You really confused me. You were invited to a tree lighting ceremony where you look down on Rockefeller Center? Is that what
you look down at the tree from Rockefeller Center.
Is that the ceremony?
Yeah, that's the tree lighting ceremony.
Wait,
yeah,
right, so hold on a second. So this event that thousands, if not millions of people flock to, you got an invite to?
I got an invite to be in an office looking down at the ceremony. Well, so the office for this law firm is looking at the tree lighting ceremony. It's happening right now.
I'm in a studio right now, and believe me, I'm looking down on the ceremony. So I don't know exactly what you gained here, but thank you for being with us. I guess that's a sacrifice of some sort.
Apparently, I made the wrong choice.
Yeah, I think we can be in agreement on that.
It's sort of like a humble brag and an insult, like wrapped together.
Yeah, I picked that up. I thought that's what it was. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that. All right, we'll be analyzing each other's comments throughout the hour as we try to get through it. And we have some stories that we want to share with people. There is a new feature on Twitter. Yes, another feature on Twitter. Enhanced fascism, but the technical adjustments keep on coming. This one has stirred confusion, anger, and a wave of online sleuthing. Oh, yeah, it's just like the good old days. After users discovered that the platform was suddenly displaying the surprising locations where certain accounts are based. Yeah, this was actually 2 weekends ago that users noticed that clicking on an account's join date now opens a tab that shows the country or region in which the account is located. Wow, that's kind of cool. I haven't been on Twitter forever, but if anyone does have access to that platform, please try that, see if that still works. The head of product for what they call X now, and that's a great title. I'm head of product. Oh, it just sounds so awful. Nikita Beer teased the feature last month as a way to help users verify the authenticity of content they read and limit the influence of troll farms, which often run political accounts from outside the countries they target. At this point, does anyone see a problem with this? This kind of data that we get as far as where something was based?
The real fun with something like this is, of course, seeing all the, there were dozens of accounts apparently that are always going on about American politics and the president and, riling up the crowds and everything. And they turn out to be based anywhere from Eastern Europe to, Mars or wherever, but certainly not within the United States. And that's amusing to look at. It's also just kind of depressing when you think about how many followers accounts like that have and how many people are being swayed by things like that. But on the other hand, I wonder about how they are determining where an account is based, because any number of people could be, say, in the United States, but using VPNs that make them appear to be from somewhere else. It's geolocation technology is very easy to find your way around.
Absolutely. We'll be getting into that in just a moment as well. But basically, as soon as this feature appeared live, Twitter/X was flooded with viral posts showing that numerous high-engagement MAGA-branded accounts that present themselves as those of patriotic Americans appeared to be instead based overseas, including Eastern Europe, Thailand, Nigeria, Bangladesh. An account that calls itself Ultra MAGA Trump 2028, claiming to be based in Washington, D.C., is listed as being based in Africa. Another now-deleted account with a President Donald Trump-inspired username, Trump is my president, was listed as being based in Macedonia. Wait a minute, hold on a second. That's not what you call it. That's not what you call it. I mean, really. NBC News, you should know better. North Macedonia. Yeah, that's where it seems to be based. It's not funny, Rob. It's real. That account was based there, an account with a username American. Really? They got the username American? on Twitter. Wow. Complete with a profile picture featuring a bald eagle over an American flag. I mean, come on. It's got to be in America, right? A bald eagle over an American flag. The account is called American. Where is it based? South Asia. My world is exploding. Yes, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fascinating revelation, I think, and that so many of these prominent accounts were foreign-based. I mean, it shows that there's a real need for transparency here. It doesn't necessarily, to my mind, though, equate to something that could be legally actionable, except for certain really, I think, limited contexts, because, you know, it's okay for foreign accounts to promote some kind of political ideology, but when it crosses over into somebody acting as like a agent of a foreign government, you might have to register as a foreign agent under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. There could be perhaps campaign finance law violations here. There could be national security law violations. But this is a fine line too, right? Because Twitter, or X as we call it at this point, I just can't call it X. I got like a block in my mind from that.
We all struggle with this.
No. So Twitter, X, et cetera, whatever. you know, they still also benefit from Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which says, like, hey, we're not liable for what our users post on our network. We're not considered publishers of that user content because they're an electronic communications network and they have all these users. And, you know, just like Facebook or any other platform, they're shielded from liability in that sense. So they really don't have anything necessarily to worry about by revealing this information. And I'm glad that they did, because I think it's an issue of transparency, and we really should have a right to this. It also, to my mind, brings up the issue of if these were foreign agents acting on behalf of some kind of hostile foreign government, why the hell weren't they using a VPN to connect into Twitter to mask their IP address to make it look like the American account was actually located in America? This kind of basic operational security to make it look like you are from the place that you say that you are. So going full circle here, if we are dealing with these types of foreign actors, they're idiotic foreign actors, and we probably don't really have very much to worry about.
Well, there's a difference between what somebody says on their social media account and how they set up their social media account. They might be smart as far as expressing themselves, and a complete idiot as far as how to set it up securely. We see this all the time. And I guess, you know, one of the reasons why this is probably so difficult for us to get our heads around is because, you know, as Americans, it's long been our policy not to get involved in other countries' affairs, not to interfere with other, you know, elections, regimes, that kind of thing. So, you know, to see somebody violate our trust like this and say things from a foreign land about our country, it's just not something we're familiar with, you know?
Oh, I can sense the sarcasm. I see it dripping over there, you know. But
oh, what is it? Do we have a leak?
Yeah, I guess, right. But from the perspective of the U.S. government, though, I think this is something that should be looked into. It would be interesting if there was, you know, perhaps a warrant issued or some kind of legal process issued over to Twitter to acquire all of this information, not just the information that relates to individual posts, but other information underlying the accounts like American with the big American, I'm sorry, the bald eagle, et cetera, and the American flag. Because as somebody who has subpoenaed Twitter and X several times over many years, there's a lot of account information and a lot of IP addresses that are associated with accounts that go beyond the IP address that's used for the post itself. So Twitter will also log the IP address that's used to create the account, IP addresses that are used to log into the account, to post certain things. All of that information together could be really quite interesting to look at. And if Twitter was really interested, X perhaps, we can call it this time, if Twitter or X was really interested in transparency, they might release that information out to the public without any kind of legal process. I think that would certainly attract my attention.
Well, apparently, I have an update on this. The biggest frenzy came one Friday ago, when screenshots and screen recordings claiming that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security account was listed as being based in Israel quickly went viral. The department denied the speculation, claiming the posts are spreading misinformation, and the feature abruptly disappeared later that day. So if you're trying to use that feature right now, well, apparently somebody ruined it for everybody, and now you have no idea where the accounts are, but they could be anywhere. And I think it might raise a very important point as far as trusting what it is you read.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And it wouldn't be the first time that a Twitter account was part of some kind of foreign influence operation. I mean, we've been seeing this quite literally since the 2016 election.
Absolutely. All right, continuing on the subject of wondering where people are, as of this week, half of the states in the United States are under restrictive age verification laws that require adults to hand over their biometric and personal identification to access legal porn. This is true? Really? People have to do this? I mean... Wow, you have your biometric and personal information to access porn. This is crazy. Missouri became the 25th state to enact its own age verification law on Sunday. As it's done in multiple other states, Pornhub and its network of sister sites, some of the largest adult content platforms in the world, pulled service in Missouri, replacing their homepages with a video of performer Sherry DeVille speaking about the privacy risks and chilling effects of age verification. The other states, but are you ready? You might be shocked. You might be in a state that is having this happen to them. Louisiana, Utah, Mississippi, Virginia, Arkansas, Texas, Montana, South Carolina. Is anyone surprised by any of the states so far? No?
Not yet.
Okay. Where was I? What was the last one I just said?
South Carolina.
That's weird because South Carolina isn't on the list I'm reading right now.
North Carolina.
I said North Carolina. Did I say South Carolina? That's weird. Idaho, Kansas, Kentucky, Nebraska, Indiana, Alabama. Well, that surprises me. Oklahoma, Florida. Here's South Carolina. Tennessee, Georgia, Wyoming, South Dakota, North Dakota, Arizona, and Ohio. Actually, you know, Arizona surprises me because there are so many libertarians out there. You'd think that they would have stopped that, you know, having to tell the government your information to access porn. That seems like the kind of thing they would really stand up for, against, rather. As you may know, your elected officials in Missouri are requiring us to verify your age before allowing you access to our website. While safety and compliance are at the forefront of our mission, giving your ID card every time you want to visit an adult platform is not the most effective solution for protecting our users and, in fact, will put children and your privacy at risk. That is the statement by Sherry DeVille. On the blocked homepages, there's also a link to an explanation of the Restricted to Adults, or RTA label, which porn site administrators place on their sites to signal to device-based parental controls that the websites are inappropriate for minors. Like most of the other 24 laws across the country, Missouri's age verification law requires websites containing more than one-third of material that's considered harmful to minors or sexual content to perform age verification checks. Similar or more restrictive laws have swept the country since Louisiana became the first state to enact age verification legislation way back in 2023. Age verification laws reach beyond porn sites, however, in Wyoming, South Dakota, Mississippi, and Ohio, where the laws are written broadly enough to cover social media sites and any platform hosting adult content. Blue Sky users have to submit to a face scan by the third-party company, Yodi, or they have to upload a photo of their credit card to verify they're over 18 years of age. In July, Blue Sky started requiring all UK users to verify their ages in response to the Online Safety Act. So this is not just in the United States here. Previous reports have focused on the security risks in uploading sensitive personal data to identity verification services, including the potential for hackers, of course, because we're the threat, to then get a hold of that information themselves. In October, after Discord started requiring UK users to verify ages, the platform announced hackers had breached one of its third-party vendors that handles age-related appeals and said it identified around 70,000 users who may have had their government ID photos exposed as part of the breach. This 404 Media story is really pretty revealing and pretty scary. I just can't believe that this is just happening. Last week, Pornhub's parent company, ILO? Is that the parent company of Pornhub? Okay, I didn't know that. Sent letters to Apple, Google, and Microsoft urging them to support device-based age verification in their app stores and operating systems, according to Wired. Based on our real-world experience with existing age assurance laws, we strongly support the initiative to protect minors online, said Anthony Penhale, chief legal officer for ALO. However, we have found site-based age assurance approaches to be fundamentally flawed and counterproductive. Instead of protecting minors, age verification laws spike usage of virtual private networks and send users, including potentially minors, to unregulated or unmoderated sites that don't care about complying with U.S. or U.K. laws. In Missouri, searches for VPNs spiked following the law's enactment. Now, Missouri schools are not required to teach sex education, leaving it up to local school boards to decide what, if anything, children are taught about sexual health. School districts that do teach sex ed are required to promote abstinence, which is long recognized as being ineffective at protecting children from engaging in risky sexual behaviors. Even if a district offers sex ed, parents are allowed to pull their kids out of that class altogether. But despite research showing age verification laws don't work either, Missouri Attorney General Catherine Hanaway believes forcing adults to undergo age verification protects the children in her state. We are proud to stand on the side of parents, families, and basic decency. Missouri will not apologize for protecting children. Well, I think we need to inform children and everybody else how to bypass these idiots. But first, thoughts. Rob.
Yeah, won't someone think of the children? That's what's always pulled out in times like this. And of course, it's nothing to do with that, because no one is arguing that children should have access to pornography. You know, responsible adults doing their own thing where there's consent all around is perfectly fine. But the definite first, there is the difficulty of the legal definition of pornography, which is still not a thing that's very clear. And it has been used against all sorts of things, from sex education material, which teenagers need well before they reach the age of legal adulthood, to even media depicting the LGBTQIA plus community, acknowledging the existence of queer people. A children's book in which a character has two dads gets, you know, pulled off the shelf in some library because a parent complains that it's sexualizing things. And this is where it's really dangerous for something like this to be an available weapon. Also leading to the question of whether or not the age verification methods that are available are even functional at all, which they aren't. We spoke on this program about kids using the image of a character in a video game to bypass face-based age verification in the UK, where they could make the character look at the camera and, you know, do whatever it needed to do to prove that it was an adult, and go from there. In this article, it refers to kids taking a photo of their credit card to or people taking a photo of their credit card to prove they're an adult. Lots of kids have credit cards. There is just nothing good that can be achieved with this, and everything bad that can be achieved with this.
Well, you know, I have to wonder, what is the issue that is new? Because the internet has been around for a while. Pornography has been around forever. Why is it suddenly something where you have to take such draconian measures and invade everybody's privacy and put so many people at risk for all kinds of different hazards? Go ahead, Alex.
Well, because it's, as Rob said, it's not about the issue that they claim it's about. It's about intimidation. They want to intimidate people from accessing this content. But I have a question to ask you guys, and you girls as well, Gila. The pornography itself, what do you think about this? Do you think that pornography is protected by the First Amendment?
I think that's been challenged time and time again over the course of, you know, human history. And I think generally people have come to the conclusion that pornography is an acceptable medium as long as it's, you know, non-exploitative, everyone's an adult, and it's something that, you know, an adult should be legally allowed to go and partake in if they so choose.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, pornography itself is protected by the First Amendment. It's legal content that adults can access if we want to access it. So we shouldn't be intimidated through age verification laws or something like that to not access content that's protected by the First Amendment. So I find that, you know, patently offensive to have these types of age verification laws. The only time that pornography will cross over the line, this is something you learn in constitutional law, first year law school type stuff, is if it's obscene. So if pornography is obscene...
Wait a minute. Well, hold on. How is pornography... I mean, how do you define obscenity? Oftentimes, people use salty language in pornography. So you're saying the pornography is not a problem, but if somebody says a word I can't say on the radio, that's the issue?
Well, perhaps. That's one of the things. I mean, the classic line about pornography is, you know, it's really hard to define, but you know it when you see it, right? But something is obscene, and this is like a really kind of loosey-goosey standard, too. It comes from this really famous case, Miller v. California, and it has to deal with contemporary standards. So if the average person, this is quite literally this, if the average person applying contemporary community standards would find that the work at issue, the bit of pornography that might be obscene, and taken as a whole, appeals to shameful or prurient interests, then it's obscene.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, it's a standard that's community based, which is what's really kind of, you know, odd about this.
And
right?
As somebody involved in radio, I'm very familiar with that phrase, and I've always been wondering how, you know, an entity like the FCC can determine what my community's standards are. The whole thing is nonsense. Kyle, did you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out. I mean, that's a very good observation that is true. It's obscenity and indecency. Especially with a visual and now video and other sorts of mediums for this stuff. But it is protected as an art form and something that I find paradoxical when you're taking away sexual education, because the sorts of curiosities and stuff that the people they're trying to protect will eventually stumble into are going to require some kind of education, and to gut the education system of anything that doesn't perpetuate things like abstinence and stuff that is itself useful, but I don't know how practical it is in that sort of modern community that would set the standard. And I think there's a lot more that you're doing to eliminate discussion, eliminate the kind of understanding that needs to happen. I think we need to decide. I mean, these feel like very unsexy times. And I think we need to understand, and that's my question here, is like, are we for sex and sexual education or not? Because this sort of puritanical attitude that they're fixing the rest, you know, the entirety of the country and as Alex pointed out, making us less free, because it feels very unfree as an adult to have to give up more information that could potentially be breached, but that they're trying to set that ideal, it just feels paradoxical and historically irrelevant to the kinds of education and the things that people should be talking about. And we should be having healthier conversations about sex and sexual education. And I find this whole issue is really disappointing, the way it's being hollowed out. And then adults somehow are punished for something that, to my mind, has a lot more to do with, and I could be wrong, but to some degree, bad parenting, because a lot of what minors do is mediated and filtered through the safety bubble that is the family and that is parenting, and that the internet is everywhere and we all have to now be concerned because there's so many kiddies on the internet. It just boggles the mind. It has always been an adult environment. It was never kid safe. It wasn't designed that way. And I think parents have a lot of control here, and to punish adults and say that they need to be responsible for jumping through more hoops to do adult things, which we agree are allowed and legal and honestly should be advocated for in the ways that a lot of these sites and entities are crying for in this moment, because to have that be sort of eviscerating the idea of sex or even anything but this sorts of ideal that they want to somehow teach. I guess they're not going to teach it and then nobody's going to watch it, so we're just going to learn it in church or something. I don't know what tradition they're trying to encourage. And it's very, like I said, paradoxical in light of the amount of talk about mediated distractions. And I think that it's really the bottom line of the things that are distracting us in social media and taking away from the sorts of connection and actual conversations people should be having. It's just tragic. The whole thing is really tragic because there's so many misunderstandings and so many downsides to trying to force this onto the entirety of America, and now half of America.
Go ahead, Gayla.
I think it's of a piece with a lot of what has already happened. And one thing I would really like to see is a chart laying out which states fall under this porn ban situation and which states have tightened their restrictions on abortion and other reproductive care. I think, Kyle, you make a really interesting point. I think that when people think about sex in certain contexts, they want one thing to exist and one thing only. It is penetrative sex between two people of opposite genders who are preferably of the same race and the same cultural group, and it is procreative, not fun, and involves two people and two people only, and they have to be married to each other. And the idea that anything else outside of that scripted text exists is the thing that they're trying to get away from.
I'm just wondering, is there a category of porn where married people are having sex? Is that I've never heard of that category. I mean, it must be a turn on for somebody, but it's I've never heard of that one.
Nor have I, but that I think a lot of the people who are creating these same laws are in this world where you only have sex with the person that you're married to, and you only do it when you're fertile. And when people don't want to have children, they don't have sex. And when people, like, it's all tied into this puritanical think of the children thing, which then just wraps in on itself like an Ouroboros of futility, if nothing else.
Wow. Well, you know, I think if you did have some kind of overlay map, you, of course, would notice that all the states involved are red states, with the possible exception of Virginia, because it was my understanding Virginia was getting increasingly blue. But here they are on this list. As I said, I was kind of surprised with Arizona being on there because, you know, they have dabbled in democracy. But yeah, you have to ask yourself, what is it about red states where people are so willing to give up their rights? Because that's exactly what's happening here. People are giving up their rights to do as they wish on the internet without being beholden to some authority figure that's going to tell them if they're allowed to or not. You know, there are ways of, Kyle mentioned bad parenting. There are ways of keeping track of what your kids are doing and making sure they have access or don't have access to things that are appropriate for them. And if you've completely lost control of your kids, that's really on you. It shouldn't be on everybody else. And all the adults shouldn't have to pay for your failings. And there should be another solution. So I'm really disturbed by how easily people, especially people who claim to stand for, you know, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, all the amendments, you know, freedom of speech, all of that, how easily they give it up when their leaders tell them to. Rob.
And there's the side of this where this is all just performative anyway to rile up a certain political crowd, because as I said earlier, in practice, it's trivial to disguise where you are located when you're looking at stuff on the internet. You can get a VPN, you can use Tor. And that leads me to think that the next thing that the people behind restrictive rules like this are going to try and do is to try and outlaw the use of a VPN or Tor or similar measures to protect your own privacy online, which you might do for any number of reasons above and beyond accessing porn. Over in the UK, where they instituted age verification for these sort of things, it became a matter of course for so many more people to be familiar with VPNs and how they work and, you know, get subscriptions to them, just because people want to access this material. There will always be people who want to, and serving those people will always be a business model. So if you want to get into the VPN business and start something up to help people around things like this, or to just put the info out there online of how people can work their way around it themselves, the information, the very information about how to get around these technical restrictions, you know, the meat and drink of those of us in the hacker community and on this program, that is the next thing that's going to be under major threat.
Well, before it gets outlawed, before it is threatened into extinction, let's explain it to people. Let's tell people how they can get around this idiocy. And again, you know, it's adults that are being punished here. We should not accept anyone having their rights restricted like this. So we talk about VPNs. We talk about Tor. Who would like to give some very fundamental explanation as to how people can start? Kyle, go ahead.
Well, it's kind of a baseline for this, but essentially you can make your connection to the internet appear as though you are in a jurisdiction where these requirements are not in place. So you can access the material, even though you're physically in one place, your connection to the internet will look as though it's originating someplace that that still allows the kind of browsing that wouldn't require you to participate in giving any kind of information over, like an ID or something.
This is how I watch Eurovision every year. The internet thinks I'm in Denmark and I can see it without any commercials. And, you know, you can't see it here without paying through the nose. Same basic principle.
Absolutely. And there's a variety of different ways to set up a VPN. There's stuff that actually runs through browsers that don't even really require that. You could set up both in combination, for instance, running Tor as well as running a VPN. There's a myriad of ways. Even an incognito tab is gonna stop quite a few of what the sorts of consumer, surveillance capitalism that we talk about and have talked about for many years, and many other far more scholarly types have noted what the surveillance is about and how it works through cookies and various things in your browsing, but basically eliminating the amounts of those things that are running and changing your geography by employing some of these tools will step up the levels of obscurity for the kinds of browsing that you want to do, and also have the benefit of getting around these geo-fencing sorts of things that the sites at question are having to do based on state laws.
Uh-huh. I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to try and use a VPN to wind up in Alabama and see if I can access a porn site from there and just see what kind of message I get and then route my way out of there. That's how the internet is designed. You route yourself where you wish to be. You know, the censorship in China, this is how people get around it. You know, for so many reasons, and it's very important, whether you're into pornography or not, this is not about pornography. This is about speech. This is about access. This is about your rights as, you know, a freedom-loving person. So the same training that you get to access a porn site from the Deep South will help you to access a newspaper that's banned in the future. And don't think those days aren't coming, because the way things are going right now, next week is a possibility. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, on that very subject, I want to talk about Tor for a second. I think Kyle did a great job in talking about VPNs and this type of technology, but there's some kind of irony here too, because Tor, which stands for the Onion Router, the core technology here was actually developed in the mid-1990s by researchers in none other than the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory. It was a government project, and the whole idea behind Tor was that they were trying to protect sensitive government and intelligence communications online. So the Navy ultimately later released the code, and that's how the Onion Router came into being here. So the Onion Router now is really this free system that bounces your internet traffic around the world by volunteer-run nodes, and it wraps that traffic in different layers of encryption so that you go through these various nodes. It becomes very, very difficult to figure out the origin of any particular piece of internet traffic, which is why it's used today by dissidents, as you mentioned, Emmanuel, as well as journalists and some bad guys too. We'll also use Tor, of course, but you know, it's a technology that really was ultimately developed. I'm sorry, was originally developed by the U.S. government, and now is being used to access porn sites.
Well, because a bad guy uses a bit of technology does not make that technology bad. You know,
I agree with that.
That is the leap in logic that I think we really have to attack here. Now, you mentioned, yes, you know, with Tor, it's very difficult. Does that mean it's not impossible to trace somebody?
There have been leaks in different Tor nodes and things, and like rogue Tor nodes. So it hasn't been entirely impossible, but it does make it extremely difficult.
Yeah, that just to expound, that's actually something that is ongoing. So please support people that are running Tor relays. There have been some raids and these kinds of actions taken against people that are supporting this network. And it's true that when you're talking about encryption, it and really technology in many ways, that it can have multitudes of uses, and the sort of behavior around using it and the purpose of using that tool can be good, bad. It could be both. You know, we deal with this paradox often. And the Tor technology is fantastic. It's very interesting. It's vast. There's a lot of tools that make it much easier that are still being developed. And they do great work there. The Hidden Services is basically a network that isn't visible on the regular internet, if you think of it like your regular top-level domains. And there's many layers of encryption that are involved in that architecture. So support the people that are supporting the methods to get the word out, because yes, it can come in handy for people using it recreationally, but it really does save and impact a lot of lives to be able to use the internet without giving up a whole lot of information.
It's so important to actually go out and support these organizations. And the way you can do that with Tor, their site is torproject.org. That's torproject.org. And you can get involved in any number of ways. You can become part of the project yourself. It's so important to learn about the technology, because that way, when it's used against you, you have a counterstrike, and you can use the same technology to basically bypass the restrictions that are being forced on you.
Absolutely. And something that they're working on right now actively, I think they're still in some sort of beta test of Onion Share, which is, I believe they're putting an application so that you can use the network and send files from like a mobile handset and use a link on that very same network in a sort of easy to use way. So they're just constantly improving and but it doesn't come from just, you know, just out of nowhere. People have been working on this stuff. And like we were talking about VPNs, there are really so many good tools, so many good projects out there. And yeah, I mean, I would also just add that it is a little bit about pornography, but your core message is so spot on.
It really isn't, though. It really isn't about pornography. Pornography is what they are using. Just like, you know, they will always use the, you know, the specter of terrorism to get what they want. You know, Trump is a perfect example of this with the horrible shooting of the National Guards people last week. He used that to target all Afghans because he didn't like Afghans. And well, then he used it to target Somalians because he doesn't like them either. He froze the whole third world immigration to the United States program. You know, that is what he wanted. It was his fantasy come true. It had nothing to do with what was actually happening, just like this has nothing to do with pornography.
Yeah, I was just thinking that in the way that it is disappearing the things that certain people don't like or don't think should exist. Mm-hmm. And that's the crux of it.
Except it's not disappearing them. You know, you can't get rid of these things.
That's I think, our point is that yeah. a lot of it, it, as you said, has been there. The impulses and curiosities of the people they're feigning to protect will be there. That's a age-old thing. Mm-hmm. And in general, sex in society is not something you're going to just be able to change with some decrees. Like in the same way as I fear as like Roe v. Wade and stuff, people will find ways around this and mm-hmm. people, I don't know, they will put up with a lot. But when you start doing these kinds of things, I think there's some compelling reasons to pump the brakes a little bit. Adults deserve to do adult things.
Absolutely. And our goal here is so people will be educated as to how to route around these restrictions, because, you know, it's supposedly pornography today. It will be speech tomorrow, and you need to know these skills. Now, we mentioned VPNs. I don't think we really focused enough on how you get involved with a VPN. And I guess the first thing you would do is you'd search for VPNs and find something that is, you know, cheap enough or even free where you can use it. And what happens after you sign up, you will basically be faced with a choice of places you want to go or appear to be coming from, countries in Europe, Canada, who knows. You pick one, and then you go to Google and you see if it says, google.ca instead of google.com, then you know that the internet thinks you're in Canada. I think it's basically that simple. Alex, did you have something?
Yeah, I wanted to mention, you know, there is this kind of countervailing argument here too, right? Where I think a lot of people might be sucked into this, which is if you argue the other side of this, you say, well, you know, go back to the 90s or the 2000s. Remember where you would go into a convenience store, and if you wanted to look at or buy some kind of pornographic magazine, you had to show your ID, right? They wouldn't just sell that to a minor. So what's the big difference here? What's the difference between having to show your ID to look at pornography in a convenience store and showing your ID to look at pornography on a website to get access to it, right? I mean, this is the analogy.
I think Gila has an answer to that. Go ahead.
Well, I think I have an answer to it, too. I mean, there's a massive difference here, right? Because there's no data stored about your browsing habits after you buy that magazine and you leave the store. Nobody's creating a record of your license having been there at that particular time. I mean, now basically your entire pornographic browsing history is stored in what could amount to a dossier mm-hmm. about your sexual curiosities. And that dossier can be lost, it can be breached, it can be transferred, it can be shared with affiliates or third parties for advertising purposes. I mean, you have no idea what the hell is going to happen with that. And so you're creating all these records that wouldn't otherwise have been created. And I think the analogy completely fails because of that. So, I mean, I just see that, you know, a lot of lawmakers, and you go back to Virginia in 2023, when that age verification law was passed, and it was a Republican-controlled legislature at that particular time. It's now a Democrat-controlled legislature, and I wonder if there's going to be backlash because of these porn verification laws in these various states. I don't know, but apparently in doing a little bit of research about this, it was unanimously passed. It was a bipartisan bill that sailed through the state legislature to require age verification for pornographic access. So I think we've got a bit of a problem on our hands here.
Well, it's kind of inspiring the states that this isn't even an issue, and we're in one of those states where this kind of thing has no chance of becoming law. But doesn't mean in the future things won't change even more. We never could have predicted this. Half the country is now subject to this. And it's just, it's terrible. It's sad. It's scary. But it's the reality we seem to be facing increasingly. Kyle?
Absolutely. And I could go on and on. I'll wait till the other part of the show to elaborate. We'll take some phone calls then as well. And I just encourage people to support the things we were talking about in as many ways as they can. Do beautiful things with their with your body, you know, and you are in charge. You have the agency, and be good to yourselves. And like, let's let's be reasonable about this stuff. And I just think that it's something that will just creep into other things if we're not adamant about it.
And take care of your kids. Don't let the government do it for you. That's the worst idea ever. Best idea ever, support WBAI, because we can have conversations like this in the middle of the FM dial in New York City. And it's an incredibly important thing to be able to do. Give to WBAI.org or buddy.wbai.org. Give generously. It's the holiday season, all kinds of deadlines by the end of December and all that. We're a nonprofit, so it's tax deductible. But the important thing is to keep 99.5 FM the bastion of free speech that it has been since 1960. Again, we are going to overtime, the last overtime of the year, by the way. So if you're thinking of waiting to join us over on YouTube, don't wait any longer. Channel 2600 on YouTube or the link on top of the page at 2600.com. We will see you again next week here on WBAI for our regular radio show. Stay free, stay alert. Email us, oth@2600.com. Good night.
Prijs niet de wees verheugd. Dit is geen uitzending van Glorie der Mensheid.
Vreest niet en weest verheugd. Dit is geen uitzending van Glorie der Mensheid. Vreest niet en weest verheugd. Dit is geen uitzending van Glorie der Mensheid. Dat de schitterende dragers der vooruitgang op hun pad niet achterop kijken. Op het zijn niet over de voorhoede der voorzichtige struikelen. En verstrikt ruiken in de verwarring der ongehoorzamen.
Vreest niet en weest verheugd. Dit is geen uitzending van Glorie der Mensheid.
Vreest niet en weest verheugd. Dit is geen uitzending van Glorie der Mensheid.
Met stofzuigers is het net als met auto's. Je zou een grote slee willen hebben, maar een compacte is leuker. En leuk is hij. Evengoed heeft hij een vermogen van 900 watt. Plus een kofferbak van 7 liter. En het inparkeren doe je met de Pink.
Moulinex, daar heb je meer aan.
Nu bij Platenwinkel. 2 splinternieuwe cd's. De eerste is van Duran Duran en heet Big Thing. Van de Pet Shop Boys. Hij heet Introspective. Nieuw van Duran Duran en Pet Shop Boys. Jouw muziek op 2 waanzinnige cd's.
Ladies and gentlemen, the bloodiest thing that ever happened. Four innocent young actresses who thought they were making just another movie, but didn't know they were making the ultimate movie.
We'll feel the pain. And you will not flinch from it.
No, the film that could only be made in South America, where life is fatal.
It was a violent summer storm. Millions of volts slashed the earth.
That was the worst storm we've had since I was knee-high to a duck.
Folks talked about it and started getting things back to normal. When Mick hit town for his vacation.
Well, it's straight ahead, about 5 miles.
But things weren't normal. There were changes.
Mother bit me.
I never saw him bite like that.
Strange, frightful changes. That night, it all started.
Stop doing that.
I'm not doing anything.
This was the night of the crawling terror. They came from everywhere. Millions of writhing, seething creatures oozing out of the mire to feed on human flesh. You sweat, but you don't dare move. Terror grips every nerve in your body. You want to scream, but you can't. Your heart beats so fast, it feels like it's going to burst.
Astronaut Stephen West was returning from outer space. But something terrible had happened.
Remember,